Hello, you are listening to Season 6 of Record of Change. My name is An Huy Tran, and I am going to be your host for this episode. Record of Change features the stories of individuals and social phenomena across the world to see how the COVID-19 pandemic has shaped and affected our lives and societies. Have you ever heard of the term ghost kitchen? What does it mean, and how does a ghost kitchen function? How does ghost kitchen intertwine with the development of the global pandemic? All of these questions will be addressed in these episodes. Moreover, I'm not going to be your only host because one of our former guests, Karina Rother, a German freelance journalist based in Taiwan, will also be joining me, but as a co-host. This is because Karina has been kind enough to help us dig deeper into the phenomenon of ghost kitchen in the context of Taiwan, where this business model has been very popular. Let's listen to Karina's interviews with a journalist who has written about this and find out what is really a ghost kitchen.
Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Karina Rother. I'm a German journalist based in Taipei. And today I am your guest host for this episode of Record of Change. And we want to take a look at the food delivery and restaurant industry today, especially in Taiwan, and how this sector has changed in the last couple of years here. And for this, I'm talking to my dear friend and colleague, Dana Gardner. Hi, Dana.
Hi, Karina. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much for being here. We want to know something about you in just a minute, but first let me introduce the topic of today's show a little bit more, because we partially want to be talking about our own personal observations regarding the food industry and the restaurant industry, but we also want to talk about a phenomenon of so-called ghost kitchens here in Taipei. And I've invited you today because you wrote an article called Ghost Kitchens Offer Taiwan a Taste of Things to Come. And in your article, it was the first time that I've ever heard of this concept, but it immediately made sense to me. And I will want to know from you what ghost kitchens are and how you got into that topic. But maybe we'll take a step back and start from you first. So Dana, hi, who are you?
I'm from the UK and I've been living in Taiwan for about 6-7 years now, and I'm a journalist. I'm a freelance journalist, very much like yourself, Karina, but I only work in print.
And you wrote this article about ghost kitchens for the January issue of the Taipei Business Topics.
That's right.
But had you thought about the food and the sort of restaurant service industry during the pandemic before that?
Not really. I was just thinking of ideas to pitch to the magazine. And I guess I had noticed that I had seen the word ghost kitchen appearing in articles from the BBC. And I'd also been hearing about it from my Taiwanese friends. So I thought I'd look into it and see if it was worth a story. And when I looked into it, there were some very big up-and-coming Taiwanese companies that were really expanding. And also they were expanding overseas too, in Canada. So I thought that it would make a good story for this magazine.
So it was really the ghost kitchens that got you interested in that story. But what about eating in general? Do you feel that during the pandemic, the way you order food, the way you buy food has changed at all?
So during the pandemic, we were quite lucky in Taiwan. We weren't really locked down for very long. And during the period where restaurants were closed, I just went to supermarkets and cooked more or ordered takeaway, because takeaway was always allowed. So it didn't really change my eating habits at all, apart from when I couldn't go to a restaurant because they were no longer allowed to be open for customers. But that period in Taiwan, I don't think lasted more than a month or two. So for myself personally, because I am not attracted by the idea of food delivery, mainly for environmental reasons, and also they cost more. I wasn't particularly affected, but I think a lot of people in Taiwan did change their eating habits.
I think that's very interesting that you weren't affected, because I sort of before that lockdown light started in May 2021 and it only went on for like 2 months or so. Before that, I had never considered ordering food through Uber or Foodpanda. And then when the cities were empty, the streets, nothing was going on, you couldn't go into a restaurant, I started ordering big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And sort of familiarized myself with those apps right away and discovered something that I think links back to the topic of food kitchens, which was that I was seeing way more sort of places that were offering food than I would know existed in my physical vicinity. So there were these sort of, yeah, invisible kitchens, ghost kitchens, which is why I find your article so interesting. And the other thing I think that we may have both noticed are just the delivery drivers, right?
Right, yeah. So Uber Eats and Foodpanda are the two main ones in Taiwan. And even before the pandemic, you would see them buzzing around the streets. And this is no like experiment that I've conducted. This is not real empirical evidence. But just my feeling is that the numbers of these food delivery guys has really exploded. Along with other delivery, there is a company called Lalamove, and they take documents or items, small items in boxes, just like the food delivery guys. And they're also zipping around like crazy in the streets in the city. So I definitely feel, I mean, I couldn't put a number on it, but maybe double the amount. This is just like just from walking around the streets and seeing them.
Yeah. And I think important to say about Taiwan as well is that they're all on scooters, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the cheapest mode of having your own like motor vehicle.
And fastest too.
Yeah. But at the same time, obviously it's very dangerous because you have these people with their big boxes on the back working all hours of the day and night and often being sort of exhausted and running from one delivery to the other. So I've been sort of seeing that increase. It totally makes sense because people in Taiwan really like their convenience and they like ordering things that just get delivered to their doorstep. Now more so than before the pandemic, but at the same time, I do think that it's dangerous for the drivers and it's dangerous for traffic as well.
And cyclists, as I am one. Also, I think because in order to get their fee, they have to deliver within a certain time frame, or if they don't make enough deliveries in an hour, it really isn't, you know, worth it for them to do the job. So they are really, really rushing to get things delivered quickly. And sometimes they will speed, go through red lights. Yeah, it can be quite dangerous. I have no information on like whether road accidents have increased. Taipei doesn't, or Taiwan doesn't have a very good road safety record. But it would be interesting to look into whether or not, because of all these new delivery drivers, whether we're seeing an increase in the number of accidents on the road.
Yeah, and I know that in Taiwan, as well as in other places, obviously, it's a big discussion on how to protect these workers and who will insure them, who will pay for their accidents. Mm. Yeah. And I don't have any data on that either. It's just something on my mind. But maybe let's move on to the ghost kitchens. And you've already told me a bit about why you were interested in them. If you don't order on like food delivery apps, how did you even come to know that they existed?
Because I had seen some stories. I think I had seen some stories about them on the BBC. And so I heard the name, and Ghost Kitchen is quite a kind of a memorable name, right? I mean, you think of it, a haunted kitchen, ghost kitchen. I think they're also called dark kitchens as well. It's another name for them, and also cloud kitchens. They're all the same thing. And so I think I was just interested to know like what this new phenomenon was, and in Taiwan, what did it look like? And indeed, as part of the story, I actually visited one.
So what is the phenomenon? What do they do? Why are they ghost kitchens?
Okay, so as far as I understand it, there are several different models. And the basic model is the ghost kitchen company just leases out a like a giant factory of kitchens. So you as a food producer can rent space in the kitchen to make your food for delivery. And the costs of you doing so are much less than opening your own food delivery, like hole in the wall or restaurant, because you can rent the kitchen for 1 month, 2 months, 1 year, and you don't have to buy any of the equipment. It's all there, ready made for you. So the basic ghost kitchen is just leasing out kitchen space. And in fact, you could lease it out for the morning only if you just want to make breakfast food, and then another company can come along in the afternoon and then make food for dinner orders. So it's extremely, like on the face of it, it's extremely efficient, and it sounds like a really great idea, saving on all these costs. And maybe it is in some sense environmental, because you don't have to have 12 different kitchens being built. You've got one kitchen that can be used, say, 12 hours or 24 hours a day. So that's the basic model of Ghost Kitchen. The main company that I focused on in the story was one called Just Kitchen. And they have an unusual model called a hub and spokes model. And basically, you can picture it as a wheel. The center, the hub, is where their main kitchen is. And that's the kitchen that I visited. And basically, they make all the different food orders for all the different companies. So maybe there's, you know, a chicken order, a fish meal, maybe it's bakery products, you know, all kinds of different kitchens make different types of cuisine. But they don't finish the meal. They make it up to about 90%. So they don't put the final garnish, they don't do the final bit of heating, they don't add the final ingredient. And then they package that food and they send it out to a spoke kitchen nearer to where it's going to be ordered. So when it's ordered, then they only have to travel, say, 5 minutes rather than 45 from where the hub is. So they put these spokes all over Taipei, where the most food orders are coming from, and it's incredibly flexible. If they find out that this area isn't doing that well, they can just close down that spoke and put it somewhere else.
I have a quote from your article here on this. And you write that according to the company, this allows it to cover a larger geographical area and also ensure the food is delivered faster, since at the time of the order, the meal will already have been semi-prepared.
Right.
And you write that that way they manage to produce or deliver up to 4,500 meals a day.
Yes.
Which is a crazy amount.
Astonishing, yeah. And these companies are also using big data. So every time you scroll through Uber Eats or Foodpanda or their own app, they can see like what you're clicking, what you're ordering, who you are, where you are, everything. So they've got these like all these algorithms to decide, you know, what food should we focus on? Oh, in this area, if this is a student area, they're all going to be ordering, you know, beef noodles. So they'll make sure that the spoke near the student area has a ton of beef noodles ready and waiting. So as soon as they're ordered, final 5 minutes cooking is done, and then zip, it can go through to the person who ordered it. And the food will be fresher because it's coming from closer to you. But if you only have that one kitchen, I mean, I'm sure you know that when you go on Uber Eats, you have to be near a particular restaurant to be able to order it, I think, maybe a few kilometers. Otherwise, you know, a kitchen the other side of Taipei isn't going to send their food all the way to you because it's going to take too long, be too expensive, and it'll be cold by the time it gets to you. But by having all these spokes all over the city, you can be guaranteed that your food is not going to be cold when it arrives because it's coming from a kitchen that may be just the other side of the street to where you live.
It's pretty crazy.
Yes.
I would say that traditional restaurants almost can't compete with that, can they?
No, because the kitchen in a traditional restaurant is built only to cook as many meals as there are, you know, seats inside a restaurant. And although, yeah, talking about ghost kitchens this way makes them sound really great, really efficient, super convenient, there is a really dark side to them, which is the amount of plastic waste which is generated. One of the kitchens, ghost kitchens that I visited, as soon as you walk in the door, there is this whole bank of plastic boxes or paper boxes coated in plastic with plastic lids. And you know, even though delivered meals are convenient, and I understand in some situations are important, you know, if somebody is under quarantine, they have to have meals delivered, or if somebody, you know, is unable to get out of the house because they're ill, then having meals delivered is also amazing. But having meals delivered to this quantity and this frequency is just causing a huge amount of excessive plastic waste, not to mention all the exhaust fumes that all these, you know, Uber Eats and Food Panda drivers are like belching out from their scooters because they're making all these deliveries, you know, every second of every hour of every day. So yeah, these companies really need to get their environmental footprint sorted out.
That is one thing. And the other thing that I imagine is probably a difficult topic with regard to ghost kitchens might be the working conditions. The way you've described it to me now is it's basically like a restaurant kitchen without the restaurant area.
Right.
So the cooks can be anywhere, like no one will have any contact with them, no one will see how they're working. What did you see when you walked into the ghost kitchen? What does it look like? What are the working conditions for the people who cook there?
Okay, so I don't have very much experience in knowing what it's like to work in a kitchen. I'm sure it's a very hard job, so it's hard for me to compare the two types of kitchens. That one that I walked through had no windows. So you just said that the ghost kitchen sounds like a kitchen without a dining area, and that's true. But the one that I went to was also a bit like a factory in the sense that it wasn't just a single kitchen. It was seven or eight kitchens that were each making a different component of a meal. So it was like, you know, the food would be portioned out in this room, then it would be trolleyed off, like wheeled off to another area where the sauces were being made, and then the sauces could be poured on. And I mean, I'm not a chef, so I don't know what all the stages were about, but it reminded me more like a factory than a kitchen. And I thought one of the saddest things is perhaps you're making food for an unseen customer. And I guess maybe in a lot of, you know, very fast restaurants, the kitchen staff don't see their customers anyway. So, but I think the conditions in the ghost kitchen, I felt were less like food preparation than just like a product, you know, manufacturing. And I interviewed a couple of people who worked there, and although they had a good time with their colleagues, they enjoyed the job because of the social aspect, they still had a lot of fun messing about in the kitchens. They did say that the pressure was incredibly intense to get the food out quickly. So if you're working in a normal kitchen with a restaurant attached, you're pretty busy, but you know that you're only making food for maybe 20 tables. But if a ghost kitchen is really successful, you're bang, 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 making food all the time, nonstop, no rest, and also a lot more meals per hour than you would if you were in a normal restaurant. And they complained that the pressure to make all these meals and also present them nicely in the box and safely so they wouldn't get squashed or mushed on the way was very intense. And in this one particular woman told me that she was given almost no training. So they were making fried chicken. People in Taiwan love fried chicken for some reason. And there are lots of fried chicken ghost kitchens here. And she was given no training, and so she didn't realize that if you put like the frozen chips, I mean, I'm British, so that means French fries, the frozen French fries into the boiling oil, they bring the temperature of the oil down. So when she put the chicken in the oil, the chicken didn't cook properly because the oil wasn't hot enough. So they sent out a whole batch of chicken meals that were not properly cooked. So yeah, the social aspect, I feel like it's very intense. And the other thing that I do want to say that maybe I didn't put it in my story, but I feel really strongly about this. One of the best things about eating is that it's a social occasion, and going out with friends to a restaurant is like a really joyous affair. And I feel like these ghost kitchens are pushing this sitting at home, eating in front of the TV or in front of the computer with a box of prepared food. And that to me is a really sad, lonely kind of picture. And I love going to restaurants. So yeah, I feel I would be very sad if the rise of ghost kitchens meant the end of the restaurant.
Yeah. And I think that the pandemic has sort of brought the scene that you just described, like sitting in front of the TV or in your little room with your pre-prepared meal on your lap, has just made that an experience for a lot of people for a long time now. And
right.
I share your sentiment that we should all go out and eat together again. And yet, you've titled your story, A Taste of Things to Come. And I also read that Taiwan is almost the first place in Asia where this business model is being trialed in the extent that it is. You were writing that it makes sense because Taiwan already has the delivery infrastructure. People
right,
are
it's
used
ready-made.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the urban areas are all sort of dense and close together. And so it's a good place for this sort of delivery-oriented food production to start to develop
flourish.
And grow.
Yeah.
So my last question for you is, what do you see the future of ordering food, cooking food for customers post-pandemic? What do you see this future to be, or to where are we headed?
Oh, Lord. I don't think we'll see the end of food delivery in Taiwan. I mean, it was pretty well entrenched before the pandemic. But I feel like we are social animals, and we're still not post-pandemic, right? We're still in the pandemic. I mean, Taiwan still has partially closed borders. I feel that people have a need to see other people, and it won't be the end of the restaurant. I think the restaurants will continue. I think the ghost kitchen model is here to stay. Whether or not it has a lot more room for expansion, I don't know. I hope not. And I really hope that before it expands, it really gets its act together in terms of the environmental cost of, you know, all the packaging that they use.
Well, Dana, thank you so much for sharing your insight into Ghost Kitchen with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for this very candid opinion and these very thoughtful observations about the way we consume food. And I wholeheartedly agree that we should all, whenever we get the chance, go out and enjoy food together.
Right.
And enjoy food that's prepared from hands that are maybe just a door down from
yes.
where we are. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guest today, UK journalist Dana Gardner, and we're signing off from Taipei.
Bye-bye.
Hello, Karina. That was a fascinating talk that you had with Dana. I really, really enjoyed listening to it. And of course, by now, I have also a lot of questions that pops up in my mind. So to start off our discussion part of this podcast, would you mind telling us some background information of Taiwan and the cultures of consuming food in Taiwan? Because I think these kind of informations is crucial in understanding the emergence and also the developments and the popularities of the ghost kitchen phenomenon that we are going to talk about.
I feel that it's important to understand that Taiwan has always had a vibrant sort of restaurant or small buffet place culture. So people are used to going out of their houses or their offices and finding places everywhere that offer inexpensive, simple meals for lunch and for dinner. So people often save time by eating out and not eating at home and not preparing food for themselves. So there is a proclivity towards using restaurant services that has changed, obviously, through the pandemic, because many restaurants couldn't offer, or for a period of time, restaurants couldn't offer eat-in services anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very similar to other countries in East Asia or Southeast Asia. So growing up in Vietnam, I think it was very familiar to me, the scenes of eating out, because there was always an abundance of options of food for eating out. And having this kind of delivery services that give you more options to stay at home and then ordering food have been a huge thing in the last decades in also Vietnam, and also see similar phenomena in places like in Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, or Singapore.
Yeah, I think me, as someone who grew up in Germany, I used to think that eating out is sort of an exclusive thing. It's you right. do it on special occasions. It costs a lot. It might not be as healthy as eating at home. So I think that's sort of the preconceptions that we Europeans, us Europeans, grew up with. But then coming to Taiwan, I learned how amazingly convenient it is and how much diversity you also have in your food, because you can go to different places every day and you save hours on food preparation every
day. Exactly. One more piece of background information that I think it is very important to talk about here is the popularities of the scooters as a means of transportation in Taiwan, because you talk about how these ghost kitchen services functions based on a lot of delivery done by people riding scooters.
I think Taiwan is in Asia the nation with the biggest, like the highest per capita scooter number. So there's, I think, 20 million scooters is the number that I've heard, which is almost as many as there are Taiwanese people on the island. So it's a very well-established mode of transportation. It's much more agile because Taipei streets are often clogged up, traffic is slow, and the scooters sort of just zip by on the left and the right of the cars. And so that's basically where the food delivery guys also fit in, because they just put the big food delivery box on their scooter and just zip through the city as well at lightning speed, basically.
Yeah, I think we talk about the cultures of eating out, we talk about the popularities of the scooters as the means of transportation, which are the two very important components that create a structure for these kinds of ghost kitchen phenomenon to thrive on. But I think I remember in the interview that you have with Dinah, you talk about how, for example, there are some also specific restaurants that only serve breakfast, and then some also only serve dinners, and then how these kind of service make use of their time slot of service to use the kitchen at another space or at another time of the day. And I think that is also something that doesn't happen a lot in other places, right?
Yeah, that's super typical, because people eat in slots, basically. They eat their breakfast out, maybe. Then they eat their lunch and then their dinner. And in between, the restaurants have very little business. And so there are some people who maybe start preparing an enormous amount of meals at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, maybe even earlier. And there are specific breakfast foods, all sorts of things that you would only have in the morning, really, in Taiwan. And then at 11, the people who want to have breakfast sort of slowly trails out, and these businesses can't, like, it doesn't make sense for them to stay open the whole day, and so they close down.
Right. Yeah, I also noticed that the phenomenon of ghost kitchen has been a pre-pandemic phenomenon, so it existed before the pandemic already. But for you personally, when was the time that you started to notice this phenomenon more?
I can't really pinpoint the time. I would say it was maybe 2019-ish. Mm-hmm. So definitely pre-pandemic, but not very long before the pandemic started, that there were more and more Food Panda delivery guys. They're very recognizable. They have big pink outfits and pink boxes. That's one of the big brands. Then there's Uber Eats, another one. Those are the big dominant food delivery services in Taiwan. And they were just becoming more and more visible. And there were, I was seeing reports of traffic incidents or accidents because obviously they're under high pressure to deliver on time, and they make more money the faster they deliver because it can deliver more meals in a shorter amount of time. And so the reports on traffic accidents were the one thing. The other thing was that sort of with the emergence of these food delivery scooter drivers, there was a discussion to be had about labor rights, because it's part and parcel of this growing service industry of this kind of gig economy.
Right.
Service jobs were starting to appear in Taiwan, and the food delivery is one of those.
And then we are talking about the phenomenon of ghost kitchen, where basically the service not only stop at delivering food, rather basically it is like a restaurant itself, like offering its whole menus, preparing the food and then delivering the food. I think these kind of like services and the phenomenon that we are talking about are two different things, don't you think?
I completely agree. And I think the reason why I focus on the delivery aspect of the whole eating out phenomenon is because the ghost kitchens are invisible, because they're ghost kitchens and I've never come across one.
Right.
So I only see the product, which is an increased traffic of food delivery scooters.
I would have to become a little bit more critical with the terms of ghost kitchen, because basically the kitchen actually exists physically. What is not existing here is the restaurant itself. So I just want to ask whether you think if the term ghost restaurants would be more suitable than the term ghost kitchen.
I think it's an interesting observation, because obviously you're right. The thing that's missing from the kitchens is the restaurant. So that's why it's a particular phenomenon. I still think that the term ghost kitchen carries a lot of important connotations, because the thing that's so interesting about them is that they can just pop out unseen anywhere, and that they might not even have windows, or they might not even be in an area where people live. They might be in like an industrial complex or somewhere. So they're basically factories for producing ready-made meals. And I think the ghost kitchen term, whether you want to call it that or not, is just trying to emulate that sense of ghostliness, of them not really being there, them not really being part of our living infrastructure, but them sort of existing in another world that we don't interact with anymore, and we don't have any points of touch apart from the fact that we consume the food that's prepared there.
You're right about one of the features of the ghost kitchen is that it just pops out of nowhere. For example, it also just appear during certain hours of a day. So it's just like appear and disappears. It's not always there.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, now it makes sense.
And it's just a parallel universe. It's not the conventional restaurant idea of where you have any interaction with the people who prepare your food. It's sort of not part of the human world, basically. I think that's where the term ghost comes in.
Right. The interview that you had with Dinah was recorded earlier this year, and a few months have passed. And have you seen any new recent developments of the phenomenon in Taiwan?
Well, what I did see, or what we did witness in Taiwan, is that the pandemic took a new turn, because with Omicron being so widespread globally, the zero COVID strategy of the Taiwanese government has been abandoned, and the pandemic has been allowed to spread since, I would say, March 2022, with most people being fully vaccinated. The government made the decision that it's sort of time to close the gap with the rest of the world, if you will. And what happened because of the increase in case numbers was that many people, even though there wasn't a lockdown, voluntarily stayed away from restaurants. So there were more and more food delivery drivers on the streets. One of the restaurants in my neighborhood that I go to fairly frequently, also during that time, they had, I would say, a ratio of customers towards delivery orders of 1 to 10. So sometimes we were the only person in there, but food delivery drivers were going in and out the door constantly. So for regular restaurants, I would say that the delivery infrastructure became one of the lifelines again in that time. And I'm sure that that's the same, like the same phenomenon affected ghost kitchens as well, so that they had an increase in business.
Yeah, and I also agree with what you and Dinah said in the interviews or in the record, is that, yeah, I also don't see ghost kitchens going out of business in the near future, at least, because the pandemic has also changed our views of eating out and eating in very, very significantly, I would say.
Yeah, and, definitely.
And one last thing that I want to discuss with you is the consequences of this kind of ghost kitchen phenomenon. You talk about the environmental consequences of this with all these kind of plastic box containers that are used to deliver food, and also the more food delivers, the more scooters on the street, meaning more gas. Or yeah, it is not going to be very good for the environment. But at the same time, from a startup point of view, it is very, very easy for people who want to open a restaurant to start their own business with this kind of model. So it is actually a pretty positive consequence on the startup scene itself. What do you think about this?
I would agree, though I assume that the people cooking in the kitchens, preparing the food, are not the business owners usually, because it, from the interviews that Dinah has told me about, they are employees and they work under a considerably more stress and less sort of leisure time or pleasant interaction with customers than people at physical restaurants. But I'm sure that the people who rent the kitchen space and who hire the employees and pay for the ingredients and who set up the websites, that for them, it is a very lucrative business model that's easy to start and that is likely to have a market. I also think that there are reasons to why that was started in Taiwan and not elsewhere, or why Taiwan is sort of one of the experimental grounds for this type of delivery service restaurant model. Mm-hmm. Is, apart from the scooters and the eating out culture, it's also a very urban space, like high density of people living in the apartment blocks and in the sort of communal areas. And then everyone has a phone, everyone uses apps all the time for all their daily conveniences. So you're more likely to order food just through a few clicks. And so in Taiwan, it's definitely a model that's easily received and positively received. So that's why I think we're seeing this phenomenon there first, and I'm sure it's going to expand into other parts of the world in the coming years.
Well, thank you, Karina, so much for having this little discussion with me. And yeah, I think the teams and also the audience are really, really happy to have you as the co-host of this episode.
You have just listened to the second last episode in season 6 of Record of Change. We hope you enjoy. In the next episode of our podcast, the whole Record of Change team will sit down together and reflect on our journey with this project so far, as we are going to have a break for Record of Change for a while. Don't miss it. We might cry. Or might not. You can listen to past episodes from the series by following us on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review and subscribe to our feed or share the podcast with your network. Our theme music is Plastic City by Blue Dot Sessions.